Welcome to episode 487 of the Entertainment 2.0 podcast, brought to you by thedigitalmediazone.com. I'm Josh Pollard.
And I'm Richard Gunther, and this is the show that puts you in control of your favorite movies, music, shows, and games. And Josh, you started it wrong. You were supposed to start it saying, live from L.A.
Where E3 is, but Richard isn't.
Right. Exactly.
Even though he's in L.A.
Exactly.
Yeah. It's unfortunate. Well, so we've got a pretty big episode this week, partly because we missed last, I don't even know how many episodes we've missed at this point, because my life has been insane, and I apologize for that. Plus, Richard is traveling, so we're kind of on a limited time frame here. So we did get a little bit of feedback. We're going to push that until next week. There are a lot of news stories, but we really had to cut down on what we were going to cover. So biggest stuff here, we're going to hit on one pretty important news story for this audience. Then Richard is, it's primarily going to be Richard, is going to recap the relevant stuff from Apple's WWDC, their big developer conference. And then we're going to hit the gaming stuff. We will still be doing what's going on in our entertainment center. So if you love that, but don't like some of the other stuff, then maybe you can just skip. But that's going to be the order for in case there are parts there that don't sound interesting to you. So with all of that being said, let's just jump straight into our first news story of the week. And that is from our friends over at Silicon Dust, the HD Home Run Servio and the HD Home Run Scribe products, because I don't remember there being two of these, are now finally available for pre-order. We kind of have to point out that they said these would be available for pre-order in March. It's now June, but hey, this is how CES announcements go. We're used to it. We don't really hold it against them. We know how this works. So as a reminder of what these devices are, there's the Scribe Duo and Scribe Quattro. These are dual and quad tuner, over-the-air tuner devices that also have built-in storage, 1 terabyte of storage, and all of the DVR hardware and software goodness. So it is a single, standalone HD Home Run DVR device with the tuner, with the DVR, absolutely everything that you need. You don't need anything else here. No computers, nothing. Just this device, put it on your network, and you can watch your live TV or your recorded TV from basically any device imaginable, because the HD Home Run app is on just about everything imaginable. So I said it's a terabyte of storage. That's roughly 150 hours of HD TV. There's the 2-tuner version and the 4-tuner version. We mentioned it does their HD Home Run DVR software. That normally would set you back $35 a year. It still does, but if you buy one of these devices, you get a year free. So your first year is free. Or if you already have a subscription because you have some of these other devices, then you get another year. All of these subscriptions stack. It's cool like that. So the important question is how much and when, right? So the Duo is going to be $200, $199.99, available only from Best Buy to start. And the HD Home Run Scribe Quattro, the 4-tuner version, is $249.99. These are coming July 2nd and July 4th. And again, only Best Buy for that Scribe Duo. Interesting little partnership there.
Oh, I see what they did there with the second and the fourth for the 2 and 4 tuner devices. Very clever, silly, a little annoying, but you know, whatever.
Well, I'm also curious how they're planning to get anyone to deliver one of these devices to you on July 4th.
Well, it doesn't mean it gets delivered to you. It just means that it's available on that day. So I'm actually really happy that these are available now. It's only 1 quarter behind schedule,
which for CES timing is actually pretty good.
Yeah, absolutely. So I think that's pretty good. I also think the timing And I'm sorry, the pricing is really good here. The pricing kind of blows Amazon away. And we did that kind of side-by-side comparison of the size of these respective devices. So I'm really happy with this. I think if you're going to do this, unless you just want to absolutely quickly pick one up at Best Buy, I don't know why you wouldn't get the Quattro.
Yeah. I mean, I suppose there's a chance that, like, maybe you really only get a couple of channels, but yeah, I think you just buy the Quattro. There's really no reason not to. And for comparison, the Amazon Fire TV Recast, in addition to being enormous, like you said, compared to these tiny little guys, you get two tuners and 500 gigs of storage, or four tuners and a terabyte of storage. And the two tuner is less. It's now $189. Than it used to be, and the four tuner is now $229. So they are less expensive, but the HD Home Run stuff works everywhere.
If you're looking on Amazon right now, they're less expensive because they're on sale right now.
Oh, you're right. They are on sale right now. Yes, the normal prices are $229 for the two tuner and $279 for the four tuner.
Right.
So the normal price of the Recast is more expensive. You're right.
Yeah. So this is a good offering. I'm glad to see this. This is an all-in-one solution. And I think that's the thing that has been missing and that itch that Amazon was trying to scratch there. And I love that they're coming in with something that's smaller and cheaper and, in my opinion, better. You could argue about the user interface experiences, but we don't have to get into that.
Right. We've been there, done that. Yeah. So the other device that they announced at CES this year is the Servio. And this is essentially just add-on storage for an HD Home Run DVR solution. It's also a tiny little box. It's got 2 terabytes of storage and comes in at $150, which is okay. Like, that's a lot per gigabyte, but it's a really, really simple solution. You don't have to have a separate NAS and all of that. It's just plug this thing into your network and go. And you can add multiples of these to your network if you want. They also include a year of the DVR service, so that's another $35 off. It's really not a bad solution.
And can't you use this with a Scribe, if I remember correctly?
Oh, yeah. Yep. You could buy a 1 terabyte Scribe, stack this on 2, and now you've got 3 terabytes of storage. So this is also going to be available on July 4th.
For whatever reason.
Right.
So, right. This is cool. I'm glad to see these out. So hopefully we'll get an opportunity to test one of these out and see what we think about them.
Yeah, definitely. All right, let's move on to some Apple news, Richard.
Oh, man, I really thought you were going to do this part.
It would be a very different segment if I did it.
Yeah, so at WWDC, there were many updates to many different platforms. This is, of course, the developer conference. So they're primarily focused on capabilities, not on hardware. And they revved pretty much the OS for everything that they have. And those revs included some nice updates that some people have been wanting, some people have been waiting for, and certainly that rumors have been speculating about. So let me run through them as quickly as I can here. On the Apple TV itself, we have a redesigned Apple TV app. Because remember, there's an app on the Apple TV called Apple TV. And it's the thing that basically is your home base and consolidator for all of your streaming services and content that you watch. They have updated that so that it too can now annoy you with instant streaming full screen previews of video. So I'm really not excited about that. And I hope they get lots of negative feedback about that. And then the thing that I think people are happy about is that they're adding multi-user support. So you can have different profiles for the people who are watching content in your home, kind of like you can do already with Hulu and Netflix, but this will be system wide. And that, I think, is really cool if you want to have a difference between, I don't know, what mom watches, what dad watches, and what mom and dad watch with the kids.
Yeah, that's very important for sure.
So I think that's a nice feature. And while we're talking about multi-user support, they also added multi-user support to the HomePod. This is their smart speaker that has Siri built in, and it's a really amazing hardware device that's just dramatically overpriced, even with a recent $50 price reduction. But they've added the ability for it to recognize the voice of the person speaking and then make available the appropriate content, for example, from your music library. So if you're asking for a playlist or you're asking for certain types of music to be played, it'll know that you prefer to hear that through, say, whatever service or you know, whatever playlist you have set up versus what someone else in the house uses. And again, I think that's a really cool feature. And we're starting to see this sort of personalization in all of these voice assistants. So this is a good addition too.
Yeah, now, it's absolutely critical in a multi-person household.
If
we didn't have, like, Google Assistant has had this for years. Amazon's voice assistant has had this for years. If we didn't have it, I don't think we could use a voice assistant in my house. And there are times when it still isn't perfect. For whatever reason, sometimes, fortunately it's not very often, but sometimes when my wife will talk to one of our Google Assistant speakers, it either won't recognize her or will think it's me. So if it's not recognizing her, I guess it's just assuming it's me because I'm the default. So then it'll start playing from my Spotify account, which means if I'm listening to Spotify on something else, it stops playing, which is super annoying, but that doesn't happen super often. So I'll be curious to hear how well that works for the HomePod.
And perhaps more importantly, that would influence your play history.
Right.
And you don't necessarily want that to happen.
No, I especially don't want that to happen if my kids are the ones listening. Jen's music isn't quite so terrible.
Totally understand.
Yeah.
Now, they've also added over 1,000 radio stations. So they've probably subscribed with some streaming radio service to make radio available. Curiously enough, they didn't just say something like RDO or whatever, iHeartRadio or, you know, whatever the service is these days for providing access to all of the different streaming versions of the terrestrial radio stations, but they're available now too somehow. Now, the other thing that I think was really interesting and entirely expected was the fate of iTunes. We talk all the time about how iTunes sucks. It's a bloated mess. And while I am not a fan of app propagation, meaning an app for every different function, I think you could make an argument that music and TV and podcasts and the way that you consume those different types of media don't necessarily all have to be in the same app. You probably have different use cases for them. You probably might access them at different times, maybe even in different places. And so that is how they are disposing of iTunes. They're basically splitting it into more or less the same three apps for those purposes, music, TV, and podcasts that you already have on your iOS devices and on your Apple TV. All the stuff that you've purchased before, it's still going to be there. All the content that you have made available from your own library and might have uploaded to their cloud, it's still going to be there. So you're not losing anything. It's just going to move to different places. You're still going to be able to sync content to your mobile devices if that's the way that you prefer to do it. One interesting thing here is that if you are a PC user, forget everything I just said. Because sadly, iTunes is not going away on the PC. The technology that they're using to split these three apps out is essentially a platform migration tool that allows them to more readily reuse code between apps that are on iOS or tvOS and apps that would run on your Mac. That doesn't do the same thing for the PC. So on the PC side, they're going to stick with iTunes. So sorry?
Right. I'm not really sure that there would have been a better answer there other than brand new apps, which I just don't see Apple spending the dime on.
Right. Exactly. Exactly. I don't think they have the interest for it. I might argue that if Windows 8, 8, 5, 10 had been way more successful than it had been, you know, arguably had achieved the success that Microsoft wanted it to achieve, then there might be more impetus for Apple to support that platform. But that just isn't the case right now.
Right.
All right. So the other thing that I wanted to talk about here, and this will transition nicely into some discussion about gaming, is that for tvOS and iOS 13, you are going to be able to use the Xbox One and PlayStation controllers to play games on Apple Arcade. And this doesn't just mean on your Apple TV. This also means on your iPad, on your iPhone, and presumably on the brand new iPod Touch that they just put out as well. That's kind of cool.
It is pretty cool. I'm not super familiar with the library of games that they have on these Apple devices and how many of them even have controller support. But for those that do, these are basically the two best and probably the most ubiquitous gaming controllers available. The Xbox controller, especially, a huge amount of PC gamers who do choose to use a game controller for some of their games, they use the Xbox controller. I don't hear of many people using a PlayStation 4 controller, but I'm sure some of them do. But if you're a gamer at all and you have any of these consoles, now you've already got a controller that you really like, unless you're a PlayStation fan, because that controller sucks, sorry, that you can use on your Apple devices. So that's really good, because I've heard, well, and it's not even just with Apple, even in Android, finding truly compatible Bluetooth controllers for mobile devices isn't always the easiest thing to do. So to just be able to grab one of these super popular controllers is really nice.
Yeah, it's cool. It's cool. And that's pretty much it. I mean, there was a ton of other stuff that Apple announced, and we dive into some of that on the latest episode of the Smart Home Show. And certainly every other podcast out there is talking about what all is going on at the Apple event. So check out somewhere else if you want more detail there. We have some gaming to talk about.
We've got lots of gaming to talk about because it is the week of E3. Even though we're recording this on Monday night and E3 hasn't technically started yet, most of the big press conferences have already occurred. So that's where we're going to go to next with, we're not even going to do them in order. We're going to do Microsoft first because we play favorites around here. And then we're going to hit Google Stadia and Ubisoft's big announcement. You notice we're not hitting Sony. It's because Sony isn't there this year. They decided to take the year off. So those will be the three that we're hitting. All right, so we're not going to do this all in the order that Microsoft did, because of course Microsoft likes to save the biggest stuff for last. We're going to start with the best stuff. That's Scarlet. Project Scarlet, codename Scarlet, whatever the heck they're calling it. I think it's Project Scarlet. It's the next Xbox. The name isn't new. They told us this before, but they did share some more details with us, including a release window, but not a date. Okay, so the first thing that I think is maybe the most important thing to say about this, especially if you've been paying attention since the launch of the Xbox One, and that is that they said they've heard gamers loud and clear, and that when a company is designing a game console, They should be designing for one thing and one thing only: gaming.
Mm-hmm. And yeah. And this is like the anti Xbox One,
right? Like Don Matrick was probably rolling his eyes. Okay, guys, whatever. But he's kind of the one that really screwed the whole Xbox One launch. So for fans of this show, this is maybe not what you want to hear, because that means there will not be a big emphasis on how to consume other media and watching live TV and all of that stuff on the Scarlet. Like, some of that stuff might not even be available. Like, there's definitely right. going to be apps. Like, there'll be Netflix apps and Sling TV and stuff like that. But they're not
Do we know that 100%?
We don't know that, but come on. Even the PlayStation, even Nintendo Switch has a lot of those apps.
Yeah, I guess. And how about the optical drive? I mean, do we have any reason to believe that that will still be a usable 4K UHD video player?
Well, so at the announcement, they didn't mention, and people did wonder, with the recent release of the Xbox One S All Digital Edition, would they abandon the optical drive in the Scarlet? Today, Phil Spencer and Mark Booty were both interviewed by a couple of different places, and they both confirmed that the Scarlet will have an optical drive. It didn't sound like either of them absolutely confirmed it would be a 4K Blu-ray, but at least one of those interviews did point out that the One S and the Xbox One X both have 4K Blu-ray drives in them, and that the PlayStation 4 still doesn't. So it seems like they want to keep that going.
Okay, good. Good.
Yeah, very good. That's important. I like how you went straight there instead of asking me, like, how powerful is this going to be for gaming?
No, because you know what I use my Xbox for.
Yeah. Yeah. Right. You're using it to watch your movies. So I think you're still going to be able to watch your optical 4K Blu-rays. I think you're still going to be able to use Netflix and Amazon Video and all of those types of apps. They haven't confirmed that, but I'm sure it'll be there. But the main focus will be gaming here, which I think is probably good for the UI too. Like, we'll probably get a more gamer focused UI, which should be good.
Yep.
Okay. So how powerful is this thing going to be? How does 4 times more powerful than the Xbox One X sound?
That sounds powerful.
It sounds crazy powerful. Like, it sounds unrealistically powerful.
Sounds Ring of Death powerful.
Well, let's hope not. But similar to what Sony has been recently saying with the PlayStation 5, they're saying it'll be able to hit 120 frames per second. It's going to be 8K capable, which, who cares? It'll support ray tracing. It'll do variable refresh rate. Interesting thing here, Sony and Microsoft, they're both using AMD hardware here. They're both saying that their devices will be capable of doing ray tracing. You know who hasn't been talking about AMD's hardware being capable of ray tracing?
AMD?
AMD. It's weird. I don't really get that, but that's a weird thing that's going on. They also, for the first time, talked about it having SSD, and things got kind of murky at this part of the presentation. They talked about SSDs, and they talked about its impact on load times, which of course it's going to dramatically decrease them. They also talked about using the SSD for virtual RAM, virtual memory. And for some types of SSDs, like Intel's Optane stuff, that can be as fast as DDR RAM. So that's cool, but SSD storage is expensive-ish. Right? So how much storage are we going to get on an SSD that'll be available for game storage, and how much of that is going to be dedicated towards virtual RAM?
Yeah, I don't know if you can still argue that SSD is... SSD prices have gone down so dramatically. I was astounded when I ordered additional storage as an external drive for my new Mac. It is way, way cheaper. Now, it's not as cheap, But I was able to get 2 terabytes on an SSD, the slimmest little adorable thing ever, for under $200.
I saw a refurb 1 terabyte SSD. I don't know, remember if this was Woot or somewhere else, but it was $85. That's crazy cheap.
Yeah, that's great.
But it's still considerably more expensive than spinning disk, and video games just keep getting bigger and bigger and bigger.
Like, true.
100 gigabyte games are becoming more normal than the exception. We'll see. That I'm very curious about that. So that's pretty much all they told us about the hardware. So then the big question was, how much is it going to cost? Yeah, they didn't tell us that. Of course, they weren't going to tell us that already. But I had really wondered, are they going to go for spring of 2020? Because if they did, they would probably beat Sony by 6 months, which would be a huge advantage. And throughout this entire press conference, they kept announcing games with spring release dates. And I thought, this might be awesome. Make these games next gen and in the spring, and that would be really, really great. Unfortunately, that isn't what they're doing. It's going to have a holiday 2020 launch date.
I'm not enormously surprised by that.
No, it's not. It's not surprising. I just kind of hope that maybe they'd find a way to do it early. But when they rushed the Xbox 360, Red Ring of Death.
Well, right, exactly. So I would rather that they take the time and get it right.
Exactly, exactly. One thing that so we're going to move on from Scarlet. One thing that we're not going to talk about here are games, because I don't think people care that much about me describing bunches of games and telling you which ones I'm really excited about. I'm not going to do that. If you want to find out about that stuff, it's all out there. So go and do that. We're going to talk about some of the bigger stuff, though. So on with the rest of the non-game specific news from Microsoft at E3. Last year, they shocked everybody by announcing that they had acquired a whole bunch of game studios. Well, they acquired another one, and this time it was Double Fine Productions. These are the guys, they've made quite a few games, but maybe their most well-known one is Psychonauts. And with that, they also announced Psychonauts 2. So that's going to be an Xbox Game Studios game, which also means it's going to be on Xbox Game Pass. So that's cool. They also talked about Xbox Game Pass for PC. This is something that was technically announced a couple of weeks ago, but they gave us a lot more information and a lot more specifics on it. So it's going to have over 100 PC games, and some of those games are games that can be played on both Xbox and on PC, the Xbox Play Anywhere games. But a lot of them are just regular PC games. So this makes a ton of sense for PC people in terms of what you're getting. It's a subscription just like the regular Xbox Game Pass for Xbox, in that it's $9.99 a month. But what they're doing is they know that a lot of their gamers game on Xbox and on PC. And this is technically a separate subscription, and it would kind of stink to have to pay for both of them. So what Microsoft is doing is they've already got a service called Xbox Game Pass Ultimate that they announced a couple months ago. And that service already included Xbox Game Pass on the console and Xbox Live Gold. And now what they're doing is, if you pay for Xbox Game Pass Ultimate, which is $14.99 a month, then you get Xbox Game Pass for PC for free. So for $14.99 a month, you get Game Pass on Xbox and on PC, and you get Xbox Live Gold. So it's a great deal if you're gaming on both platforms. If you're only a PC gamer, then just get the regular Game Pass for PC, because you won't need access to Xbox games because you don't have the console, and you don't need access to Xbox Live Gold if you're playing on a PC. It's not a service that's required for online multiplayer gaming and things like that. But if you are gaming on both, then it makes a ton of sense. And you can jump in now for one whole dollar, just $1 to get in. Now, here's the other really cool thing that they didn't announce, but it's definitely a thing. My co-host over on Story Players, Joe D'Estasio, told me about this. If you have an existing subscription with Xbox Live Gold or Xbox Game Pass, and you pay to switch over to Xbox Game Pass Ultimate, then they're going to combine your subscriptions and give you even more time. Now, I might confuse this because it's kind of confusing, but we looked at my situation. I've got Xbox Live Gold for another about 6 months, and I've got Xbox Game Pass for another roughly 6 months. They both end for me in December of 2019, so a little more than 6 months away. If I pay the dollar to get another, you know, a month of Xbox Game Pass Ultimate, what they're going to do is combine my Game Pass and my Xbox Live Gold subscriptions, and my Game Pass Ultimate subscription will go until roughly June of 2020. It's almost like getting 6 months free. And that amount of time that you're going to get for free is all entirely dependent on what you have. So if you have Xbox Live Gold or Game Pass codes laying around that you haven't applied, then go and apply them to your account and then pay the $1 to switch to Game Pass Ultimate, and you'll get a whole bunch of extra time and all three services. And if you're worried about being tied in to something because maybe you don't want to pay the $15 a month when this all ends, you don't have to. This is a month-to-month service. So when all of that is complete, when your subscription is up, you can just cancel and go back to doing things the way that you've always done it. And maybe that means just getting Xbox Live Gold cards when they're on sale on Amazon, and maybe only signing up for Game Pass when it has new games that you care about. That's all still totally doable. But go and do this now, because you're going to get a bunch of free time if you still have time on Xbox Live Gold or your Game Pass subscriptions. In a rumor that I didn't believe until they actually said it, Microsoft did actually announce a new Xbox Elite controller. They're calling it the Series 2. It looks cool. It looks really cool. It's better designed. It's got better controllers. It's got adjustable thumbsticks now. It's got Bluetooth. The old one didn't. It's got an internal battery, and a charging dock comes with it. That internal battery is supposed to be good for 40 hours of battery life. That's all really good. What's not good? The price. It is $179 for a controller. Now, it's probably the best controller available anywhere, but it is a $180 controller. It's going to be available November 4th if you want it. But here's the other thing. We already mentioned Scarlet comes out a year after this comes out. I think it's safe to assume that this controller will work with the Scarlet in some way. At the very least, with it being an Xbox One controller, I think you're going to be able to use it to play anything that you can play on an Xbox One, because backwards compatibility is something that's going to continue. So all Xbox One games are going to be playable on the Scarlet, we think. And all of those Xbox 360 and original Xbox games that you can play on Xbox One now, you ought to be able to play on the Scarlet. So if you buy this $180 Xbox Elite controller, you at the very least ought to be able to use it to play all of your backwards compatible things. But what if the Scarlet has some brand new, completely different controller? Well, then you're probably not going to be able to use this Elite controller to play your brand new Scarlet games. Maybe that won't be the case, but I'm not sure that I'm willing to drop $180 on a controller that might really only be useful for a year. Maybe you're different. I love this idea. I think it might actually help me not be so terrible at games like Call of Duty, but I just don't think I can justify $180 for this controller. We expected Microsoft to talk a lot about Project xCloud, because while the Scarlet isn't coming out for a year and a half, Project xCloud is going to be available to normal users this year in 2019, but they actually didn't. They barely talked about xCloud at all. And when they did, they talked about the fact that you're going to be able to use your own Xbox to stream from, and they're calling it console streaming, which really isn't a ton different from what you can already do. You can already stream from your Xbox to other Windows devices, so not everything, but Windows devices within your home. It sounds like once this launches, which should be in October, you're going to be able to stream directly from your Xbox to other devices outside of your network. So to your phone, to your tablet, to other PCs or whatever, anywhere. But that's really going to depend on how good your internet service is at home. So you might not want to be doing this for Call of Duty or a fighting game where every millisecond counts. But, you know, if you're playing a slower paced or, you know, a turn-based game or something, then it might be fine. So very few details listed there, but it does sound interesting. And I'm guessing, they didn't say, but I'm guessing that this console streaming would not cost you anything. It doesn't sound like that would be an extra subscription. Another piece of information that came out today, now this is one day after the actual press briefing happened, is some news around backwards compatibility. Backwards compatibility got announced at E3 in 2015, and it's been really successful. According to this article, half of all Xbox gamers have used backwards compatibility. I don't use it a ton, but I've definitely used it for some really well-loved games. And I know a lot of you have used it a lot more than me. So it's a great feature. It's been a really, really nice feature that the PlayStation just didn't have until last year. And the really good news here is that it's going to continue. There, all of these things, as I mentioned a few minutes ago, are going to be playable on the Scarlet. So that's good. The somewhat unfortunate news is that the games that they announced today as additions to the backwards compatibility library will be the last games that they add to that library for the Xbox One. So in June of 2019, you're getting your last bunch of games. Granted, it's over 600 games that are backwards compatible, but between now and next fall, probably next November, there won't be any more added to that list. So if there's been a game that you've been really, really hoping for, like NHL 3 on 3 Arcade, really wish that would have come, it's not coming. Sorry. Too bad, it ain't happening, but at least it's all going to be playable on your Scarlet. And that's really a big deal. That's not something to just write off. The Microsoft's commitment to backwards compatibility has been a really nice feature for gamers. It's a feature that puts gamers first. It's not profits first. It's not the publishers first. It really puts gamers first, because you don't have to rebuy these things. If you already own them, they just work. It's really awesome. So I'm glad to see that it's going to continue forward. And at this point, the vast majority of the games that people have wanted available via backwards compatibility have been made backwards compatible. So the big overall themes from the press conference, obviously Scarlet, of course, but another big one, tons of games on Game Pass, tons. I believe they said 34 games were shown that are going to be available on Game Pass. When this was first rolled out a year ago, I was kind of skeptical, didn't think I'd really want it, but man, I do now, and I'm really glad that I have it now, because there's a lot of really great first-party games that are available, and now with Microsoft purchasing so many studios, there's a lot of games that are coming out that I'm like, I'm interested in that, but it's probably not a game I'd pay full price for. Well, now it doesn't matter. Like, I can play it day one without having to pay $60 for it. So I'm really excited about Game Pass and what they've been doing with it. And I really hope that it's going to continue on into the Scarlet generation. And I don't have any reason to think that it won't, but I do hope that as they do, they're going to continue to make Xbox Game Studios games available day one on Game Pass, like they've been doing. Another big thing that they mentioned quite a few times is crossplay. I think, frankly, this is one of the biggest trends, most important trends in gaming of the last year. It's huge. We're now seeing major games being able to be played with your friends regardless of what they're playing on. You know, you can play Fortnite on anything with anybody anywhere. We've seen it with Rocket League. The newly announced Call of Duty is going to have crossplay. And Microsoft announced crossplay on a bunch of other games here too. So that's really awesome to see them doing. And it comes back to a line that they said a few times, both just while talking about what's going on now and talking about the future with Scarlet. What they're focusing on is that they believe that you should be able to play whatever you want with whomever you want on whatever device you want. And they're delivering on that strategy. They've got the games with all of these studios they're buying, although maybe that is the weakest point because you're still not going to be able to play God of War or Spider-Man or some of these other really great PlayStation exclusives. But everything else, including all of those great third-party games, with anyone you want, even if they're on a PlayStation or they're on a PC or they're on a Switch, like crossplay happens across all of those things now and on whatever device you want once Project xCloud launches, because then you can play it on your phone, you can play it on your tablet, your crappy computer that you get at work. Like all of these things are going to be able to play triple A, you know, amazing games just streamed over the internet. So it's a really, really great vision that they're absolutely delivering on. And I think it's a really fantastic time to be an Xbox gamer. Okay, Ubisoft also had a pretty big event today. And while most of their event was talking about games that they're going to be publishing over the next year to year and a half, they also talked about a service that we expected them to be releasing because it was leaked a couple of weeks ago and we talked about it recently on the show. It, of course, is called Uplay Plus, and it's basically Xbox Game Pass for PC, but only for Ubisoft games. I don't want you to hear me say only Ubisoft games and think that I'm trashing the service, because Ubisoft has a lot of really, really great games. Assassin's Creed, all of these Tom Clancy games that are available. Like, there's tons of really great Ubisoft games, but the service is a PC-based service, and it's just Ubisoft. You're not going to get all of these other Microsoft games or EA games or anything else. You're only getting the Ubisoft library. Now, this library is over 100 games, and like Xbox Game Pass, it will include brand new games. So when the new, well, I think they announced three new Tom Clancy licensed games tonight. When all of those comes out, they'll all be available as part of this subscription on PC. The other thing that it does that Game Pass doesn't do is this gives you access to all of the DLC for games. We're used to most games nowadays come out with, you know, two or three or four different versions, all coming at the different levels of extra content and expansions and season passes and all that stuff. All of that is still extra if you have Xbox Game Pass, but with Uplay Plus from Ubisoft, you get the top tier version of all of these games. So that is a nice addition that none of the other services are offering. Right now, well, I say right now, but it's not coming out until October. It's only going to be on PC. But interestingly, in 2020, it's going to be coming to Stadia. You probably expected me to say Xbox there, or maybe PlayStation. But no, Stadia, Google Stadia, their game streaming service. So that's an interesting partnership that I didn't expect at all. So what's it going to cost? $15 a month. And I think that's really the biggest problem with this service. It sounds like a great service, for sure. It's great games, and you're getting brand new games in it. But $15 a month? That's a lot to get games from just one publisher, even if it is the second or third largest publisher. I think they're going to struggle with that price. So hopefully it won't take long for them to change it to make it a little bit more competitive. And as other publishers start to release similar services, they're all going to, well, they're either going to force each other to compete and maybe bring prices down, or they're all going to settle at some baseline that's actually higher, which would kind of stink for us, the gamers. All right, last big thing that I want to talk about from E3, and this also isn't technically from E3, Google decided that they would get out in front of it even more than these other publishers by having their big announcement on Thursday. And it's not as big of an announcement because they've already announced what Stadia is. They just left out a whole lot of details when they did that announcement a few weeks ago. So a few more details this time around, although still not all of them. We now know it's going to release in November. We know that you're going to be able to play it in November if you sign up and pre-order the Stadia Founders Edition. So what is the Founders Edition of a streaming service? Well, it includes their new controller and a special edition of it that I think looks gorgeous. I really like the visual design of this controller for sure. It also includes a Chromecast Ultra, and you get 2 3-month subscriptions to the Stadia Pro service. The reason you're getting 2 subscriptions is it's one for you and one to share, which is a nice idea. Be nice. Share with your friends. It's a cool idea. So what is Stadia Pro service? Well, Stadia Pro is a subscription that would normally cost you $10 a month. It's actually $9.99, and will get you access to a streaming library. It will stream at up to 4K resolution at up to 60 frames per second. It'll have HDR visuals and 5.1 surround sound audio. The current library of games is around 30-ish games, but they say they're still working with Capcom and EA and Bethesda and some of these other publishers. So there will be more games for sure. There's definitely going to be more games. And a lot of the ones announced are big deal games, you know, some of the latest Tom Clancy games or Assassin's Creed is on there. Doom is going to be on. Like, a lot of the big name games are going to be there. If you don't want to pay for the subscription service, though, you don't have to. There will be a free base service, and that will be limited in your in the fidelity. You're not going to get 4K streaming. It's going to top out at 1080p, and it's going to top out at stereo sound, but that's fine for most people, especially when it comes to the bandwidth required to stream 4K. So how does it work if it's free? Well, it just means you have to buy the games instead of just subscribing to a library of games. You'll just pay for them individually. Pricing has not been announced on any of those. And if you want to get in on the free level, you're going to have to wait until next year. If you want to play this year, you have to buy the Founders Edition. So what are you going to be able to play it on? Because that was one of the other big things about Stadia, is that in theory, you'd be able to play it on basically anything, pretty much anywhere. Well, right now, anything and anywhere is actually pretty limited. It's only going to work on the Chromecast Ultra, which is a $70 streaming device, I think. A Chrome browser, so that's pretty common. You know, pretty much any PC or Mac. And I think, well, no, I don't think this will work on the Chrome browser on mobile devices, because when it comes to mobile, it's only going to work on the Pixel 3 phones, Pixel 3 and Pixel 3a. So that's it. It's going to come to more devices eventually, but they haven't said when or what. So you're going to have to wait and see on all of that. If you're interested in just that controller so that you can maybe eventually sign up for the, or you know, use the free service, that controller is going to set you back $69. Okay, so that's it for all of the big gaming news from E3, at least the big gaming news that wasn't specifically about individual game titles. Now we are going to talk about some game titles, the ones that you get for free. So it's now a new month. That means new free games with gold on your Xbox or free PS Plus games on your PlayStation 4. So new for June on the Xbox side for the entire month long, you get NHL 19. I know a thing or two about that game. It's a ton of fun. You should get it and play with me. It's a lot of fun. Because of the weird scheduling of the Xbox Live games with gold, for a couple more days, you can still get the Golf Club 2019, but your other games, the Xbox One game for June 15th through July 14th is Rivals of Aether. I believe this is a role-playing game. Your Xbox 360 backwards compatible games for the first half of the month. So only a couple days left. You should get this if you don't already have it. That is Portal, one of the best puzzle games of all time, without a doubt. You definitely want to get that. And then in the second half of the month, Earth Defense Force 2017, a highly acclaimed tower defense game. So grab all of those if you're an Xbox gamer. But if you're a PlayStation gamer, you've also got some pretty nice games to grab. You can get Borderlands, the Handsome Collection, which I believe is the first two Borderlands plus one of the spinoff games. I'm not a Borderlands player, so sorry for not knowing all of those details by heart. And then the other game is Sonic Mania. This came out last year, I think. I think it was late last year. It might have even been early this year. This is a Sonic the Hedgehog game that's kind of back to Sonic's roots. It's a 2D side-scroller Sonic the Hedgehog game, and it was pretty well received. So absolutely no reason not to grab both of those if you're a PlayStation gamer. And that's it for our gaming news. All right, Richard, before we get out of here, it is always fun to discuss what's going on in our entertainment centers. Richard, what's going on in yours?
Before we get out of here, geez, sometimes this is half the show. What are you talking about? All right, I will try and make this quick, but I've had a lot going on in the last 2.5 weeks, I think it has been. So first off, I got tired of my ridiculously high cable bill. So I called and canceled all my premium channels. I used to get all the premium channels. I used to get Showtime, Stars, Cinemax, HBO, Epix, everything.
Wow.
I canceled them all. I'm saving $50 a month on that. They didn't push back at all. They said, well, you know, if we get you on a new contract, then we can give you a really good deal. I said, yeah, if you have some special that doesn't require me committing to 2 years, then I am all in. And they're like, okay, so your new plan is going to cost blah. And they, yeah. And there was no special associated with that. Now, you know, I can live without this, except that every once in a while, there's stuff that you want to watch on HBO. So literally the very next day, I signed up for HBO Now. So, and they, every place that you can get HBO Now, either as an add-on or standalone, there's usually a trial period. So they had a 7-day trial period where you don't pay anything and then you could cancel it. So that's what I did. I had a 7-day trial period, and I'll talk a little bit later about what we watched. But it was funny that as soon as we got rid of it, then, oh, there was that thing we wanted to watch, but it's easy to pick it up and let it go. So that's the thing that's kind of nice now.
Yeah, for sure.
Now, on my Plex server, where all my movies were, that's been running Windows 7.
Whoa.
Like, still.
Yikes.
And it's on an old ThinkCenter or Idea Center. I think it's a ThinkCenter. And it had 4 gig of memory. And I was having problems with stuff crashing. And I'm like, you know what? I really need to rev this up a little bit. So I updated it to Windows 10. And I ordered new memory and updated the memory to 16 gigabytes. And wow, much better movie server.
Imagine that.
I also ended up spending some time just moving files around because I had recordings from Plex that were in two places because of like storage access problems at one point. So it's amazing how long it takes to copy, I don't know, like 4 seasons of The Blacklist and 8 seasons of NCIS, whatever city it's in, and all this other stuff that I just had kind of forgotten about and hadn't bothered to put back on my TV server. So I have all that stuff back in place now. And I retired an old PC that I was using to control the piano. And I think I mentioned in the past, I use iTunes on an old PC to run our player piano. And that's a really cool setup that one of these days I have to get into more, like talk about that more, because it's a pretty cool thing.
It is a really cool thing.
And I'm like, well, why don't I just load iTunes on this same computer now? Because it's going to be more capable. So I retired an old PC that I'm really happy about.
Nice.
One less box turned on 24/7, which made me think, maybe I should get rid of my Windows home server.
Whoa.
No, I'm not doing it yet, but I'm thinking about it. Do you still have one running?
Heck no. No, I got rid of that so long ago.
Yeah. Okay. See? Yeah. I don't know that it's necessary anymore. So I need to think about that a little bit more. All right. So what have I been watching? Game of Thrones is over. And in fact, while I'm out here in LA, we're going to be recording our last episode of Let's Talk About Thrones, which is kind of a retrospective. And one of the things that we'll talk about is The Last Watch, which was HBO's 2-hour-long special, kind of chronicling some of the actors and some of the team that made Game of Thrones possible. Really cool. I actually liked it better than the finale, but we don't have to get into that. I also finished Making a Murderer season 2. So now I hope there's a season 3 because there's more story to tell. So I'm waiting for that. I've been watching The Amazing Race and I am so, so happy about the elimination that I've wanted to have happen all season long. So that is going really well. And now it's going to be hard because pretty much anybody that's left, I'd be happy if they won. We finished watching all the remaining episodes of The Cool Kids. That is that Fox sitcom. And it has not been renewed for another season. So that is over. We started watching Good Omens, which is the new series on Amazon, basically with like a demon and an angel that are looking over the earth. And it's kind of interesting. I'm liking it. Hmm. So that's been pretty cool. It stars David Tennant from largely known from Doctor Who. And I forget the name of the actor who plays the angel, but well-known actors, the guy from Mad Men, I forget that actor's name too. I don't know why I should have written this down, but in any event, they have a really good cast. And so far it's been pretty good. It's dark, but it's good. And I have also started watching the 3rd season that Netflix picked up of Designated Survivor. This was a TV show on traditional over-the-air networks, and it was canceled, and Netflix picked it up. I'm like 15 minutes in, and I'm already bored. So
there's a reason it was canceled, Richard.
I hope it gets better, because, yeah, it needs to be better. Now, talking about better things, I watched the movie Apollo 11, which I think I had mentioned last time we talked that I was going to be getting. It was great. I really, really liked it. It was not by any means like the best retelling of that story or the best space movie or anything like that. But the quality of the audio and video in that will just blow your mind. They're going to show this. You'll be able to watch it for free on CNN when it's aired on, if you have cable anyway.
Right.
And I highly suggest watching it. It'll be aired on I should know this date, the date that the actual landing occurs.
July 20th.
20th. Okay. I knew it's July.
I'm pretty sure it's the 20th.
Didn't know what date it was.
If I'm wrong, it's the 18th, but I'm pretty sure it's the 20th. Yeah. The 50 year anniversary.
Yeah. The quality is just like, there are times that I'm watching it and this is going to sound so ridiculous, right? For many reasons, there were times when I was watching it and I had to remind myself that it was real and I wasn't watching a movie. And that's funny because, of course, it is a movie of what happened using right. original footage that they had recovered in this high, high quality footage that they rescanned at like 8K to be able to get the high quality resolution that they have. Not all of it is. A lot of the stuff that you've already seen, like in Mission Control, a lot of that stuff is still not as good quality, but the found footage is just phenomenal. And then, you know, it's also funny because people argue that none of it was real. It was all just staged.
Right. So I have a quick question for you about this. Yeah. I have an 11-year-old and a 6-year-old, and I think the 6-year-old would be bored, but would an 11-year-old appreciate this?
Is she into space and science and stuff?
Yeah. I mean, not to the extent that you and I are, but she gets into sciencey stuff.
I think so. I think it would be interesting. I don't know that I would start here.
Okay.
I would probably start with something more like When We Left Earth or one of the documentaries that over the course of an hour takes you through, like, you know, several years of activity.
Okay.
This is pretty much all focused around 4 or 5 days.
Right.
You know, I mean, so I don't know. I don't know. I would suggest watching it yourself, maybe get a feel for it and then see if that would be, if you think that it would be interesting to her.
Yeah.
And then finally, the thing that we wanted to watch on HBO was Chernobyl. I'd heard a lot of good things about it. Didn't really know anything about it. Edward had heard some stuff about it at work and we're like, yeah, let's watch it. And it's 5 parts. It was a miniseries, about an hour each, some a little bit longer. Wow. Wow. Like, it's a docudrama, so there is some stuff that's made up, and there are characters that are real and characters that are made to represent either one or more other people that may or may not have actually existed. But wow, I learned a ton about this that I just didn't know. Like, for whatever reason, I never knew that this was actually in Ukraine. I thought that this was in Russia somewhere.
Mm.
So I loved it. I absolutely loved it. It's frustrating. It makes you hurt inside a little bit while you're watching it. It's kind of brutal too when they have scenes during the meltdown. So be prepared for that if you get queasy on stuff like that. But I was thoroughly impressed.
Hmm. Yeah, I've pretty much only heard good things about this. I think I need to go get an HBO trial and check this out also.
Exactly. Exactly. Just go to Amazon and say, yeah, I want the free 7 days of HBO on my Amazon. So anyway, that has been a lot of stuff that I have been watching and doing in my entertainment center. Josh, how about you?
So Stanley Cup finals are going on. So even though my Penguins aren't in it, I am watching. I have always liked the St. Louis Blues, so I've been rooting for them. I mean, they're not my favorite team or anything like that, but I like the Blues. Wayne Gretzky played for like 3 months for the St. Louis Blues, so it's good enough for me. So rooting for them. It's now going to Game 7. Really wished St. Louis could have won it at home in Game 6, but they didn't. So some of that. Played a little bit more of God of War on PlayStation 4, and I've also been, you know, really trying to focus a lot more on my guitar playing, and thought some of this guitar practice that I'm doing, like, I can do with basically without making much noise at all. I could be watching TV and movies while I'm doing this.
Wait, what? How does your brain do that?
Well, some of it is really just building like mindless muscle memory repetition type stuff. And I'm like, I think I can do that while I'm watching TV. So I decided I've really been missing Homeland. I'm way behind on Homeland. So let's watch some Homeland. And I opened up the app and was like, I don't even know what season I was on.
No
way. It's been so long. So I was like, yeah, let's start on season three. I was probably on season four, I think. But I love the show. So if I rewatch a season, it's fine. So I watched the first episode of season three of Homeland, and we'll go from there. And then the other thing, I've got The Good Place in the notes here, not because I watched any of it tonight, but because of the news around The Good Place that hit today. This upcoming season will be the fourth season, and it will be the last season. And
wow,
it's bittersweet. You know, it's sad because, you know, I'm disappointed to see the end of the show, but I'm happy about it because the creators of the show said, this is all we got left. Like, we don't want to force this show to be longer than it needs to be.
Yep. Very smart.
Yeah. And NBC and Universal didn't tell them, tough, this is one of our highest grossing shows right now.
Right.
You will make more episodes.
Yeah.
So I think this is for the best, even though it's sad. So
that's great. That's really cool. I like to see when showrunners and studios make smart decisions like that. I think it was pretty much the same with The Big Bang Theory. They were at the top. They were doing very well. Why push it? Just let's end it while we're doing really well and we love doing it.
Exactly.
Cool. Cool, cool.
All right. Well, that is it for our show tonight. You can get a hold of us a bunch of different ways. All of the information is, of course, on the show notes over at thedigitalmediazone.com. But you can also find us on Twitter. Richard is at Richard Gunther. I'm at Josh Pollard. And the website is at DigiMediaZone. Richard, you've got another show called Home On. What's going on with Home On?
I do. I'm currently working on getting out a new episode with Bryant Bilal from Eaton Lighting. He's someone I met at Light Fair, and we had a really cool discussion about the Halo home products that you may actually be seeing these days in your local Home Depot. So expect that this week, and I think you'll enjoy it.
And while I don't think we'll always talk about your work on the Smart Home Show, I think it makes sense to point out your most recent episode because you did, and I know this because I was listening to it before we started recording tonight. You guys, you and Adam Justice, and now I'm blanking on the person from
Renee Ritchie,
yes, from iMore, covered everything else that was discussed at WWDC.
Well, at least as it had to do with HomeKit and home-related stuff.
Yeah.
There's still more. That's just true. Didn't get into it.
You didn't talk about $30,000 PCs and stuff like that?
Exactly.
Yeah. Okay. Okay. So almost everything else that
normal people
care about.
But yeah, thank you. I appreciate the plug. So you can also get more information on WWC at the Smart Home Show.
All right. And while we didn't do this show live, we normally do record Entertainment 2.0 live on Tuesday nights at 8:30 p.m. Eastern. Hopefully by next week, we'll be back to our normal schedule. Follow us on Twitter to know for sure when that live show is going to happen, because that's going to do it for episode 487. He's Richard Gunther, and I'm Josh Pollard. Thanks for listening to Entertainment 2.0. Adios.
Goodbye.